The Associated Press has reported the government is going to unusual lengths to cloak the use of surveillance technology by local police. Now, rarely has the federal government interfered in local open records conflicts, but recently the FBI told a court in Arizona releasing information about police surveillance would make it harder for the Bureau to protect the public from terrorism. For more on these situations, we turn to Dan Metcalf, an American University law professor and executive director of the Collaboration on Government Secrecy. Dan, good morning.
Good morning, Tom. How are you today?
All right. And so give us an overview of what's going on. How often or how frequently has the federal government intervened in local cases here?
Well, I have to say first and foremost that it rarely is done. And by that I mean to say just a handful of two instances over the past 30 to 35 years. But there is a legal basis for it. And without getting too much into the weeds, I can tell you that it connects to what's called the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution and the legal doctrine that the federal action can preempt state action, sometimes in court.
So what are these cases, the one or two that we know for sure, what are they usually centering on?
Well, let's take the Tucson case, for example, which is mentioned in the AP report in which I'm quoted of last Friday. That's an instance in which there was a joint federal, state, or federal local activity regarding surveillance, evidently. And as a result of that activity, records were created. And that's what, of course, implicates the Freedom of Information Act, both at the federal level and at the state level. And in this case, evidently, the records were either created or obtained by the local police department, and someone tried to get access to that, properly so or understandably so, under the state Freedom of Information Act. That happens all the time. All states have FOIAs, as we call them, FOIA statutes. But the thing that makes this different is that the federal government, having learned about that pending FOIA request and then the litigation based upon that FOIA request, decided to participate. And I'll use the word participate sort of in quotation marks, because they didn't do it in the ordinary and what I think is the proper way.
And so how did they do it, and what should they have done to be legally proper?
First, we'll start with what they did do. According to the AP report, they apparently talked to the local police department, learned of the FOIA request being filed, and came to the conclusion that there was a federal interest, or sometimes called an equity, that's just sort of a colloquial way of referring to it, in some or all of the information that was on the hook, so to speak, under the state FOIA. And they decided that they would apparently continue with the state action. By that I mean to say participate in the state lawsuit simply by submitting a declaration, which is like an affidavit, that asserted the federal interest and explained why the federal government was concerned about the sensitivity of the information. That's what they did do. Now I can tell you what should have been done legally, and something that I did myself back going to the late 1970s. That is, what they should have done is gone into court, state court, through the local U.S. Attorney's Office, and filed a petition that's called a removal action. And removal is just a legal term of art that says that a matter pending in state court in which the federal government asserts a federal interest, and in this case it's the sensitivity of the information that's at issue, that the state court judge has to, as a matter of law, send the case to the federal court, the local district court. This would be for the District of Arizona. And then the federal judge applies federal standards regarding disclosure or not. That's the proper way to do it. It doesn't happen every day, far from it. As I say, it's probably happened only with a couple of handful of cases in the last 30 to 35 years, but I had one such case in the late 70s. And that's the way it should be done. A state court removal action by the U.S. Attorney's Office into federal court, and then if the party to the state FOIA lawsuit, whoever the requester is, wants to fight that, they fight it in federal court in what's called a remand action, and they apply the substantive standards of the federal FOIA. And in this case, there might be a difference in the standards. And by that, I mean to say you could have a bit of information. Let's say you're holding a page in front of you, and the federal government says that's sensitive. Paragraphs 3 and 5 are exempt under the federal FOIA. And then someone on the other side of the fence says, wait a minute, I'm looking at the state FOIA law, and it tells us what is exempt from disclosure and what is not. And under the state FOIA law, paragraph 3 qualifies to be exempt, to be withheld from the public, but paragraph 5 doesn't fit. Then the federal government says, ah, but you're just applying the state standard. Now we're going to show you why paragraph 5 fits within an exemption under the federal law, and to protect the federal information involved.
We're speaking with Dan Metcalf. He's an American University law professor. He's also executive director of the Collaboration on Government Secrecy at AU. And Dan, let's talk a little bit about the judges here. Do you have any clues based on your experience as to whether judges are inclined to go along with what the federal government says is in the name of counterterrorism, or whether they are questioning that in the name of openness?
Okay. Well, now we're going more to the substance of the withholding issue, whether it's too sensitive to be made public or not. And I've been talking now about what the procedure should be. I'm going to imagine here that the records do reflect this particular type of cooperative activity between the federal government and the local government, and that at least some portion of them have a legitimate sensitivity. In other words, describe a technique that does properly qualify for substantive protection under the federal FOIA. But at the same time that I imagine that, I'm also going to say that the odds are high, based upon my experience, that that's true for only some of the information involved, not all of it. And there's a process under the federal FOIA, and it's true of states as well, called segregation, or reasonable segregability is the word sometimes used. And what that means is there's an obligation not to just withhold something in bulk or on gross, but to go through it and look at what's sensitive particularly and what is not. I suspect here, and it's a reasonable suspicion based upon experience, that under the state FOIA and in the state lawsuit, the local police department withheld everything. In other words, categorically just said, no, we're not going to give you anything. We're making a broad withholding of records. And the federal government then supported that with that declaration about sensitivity in general. But that when a judge, either a state judge or a federal judge, looks at that, the judge will start parsing through and say, okay, yes as to this, but no as to that. So you'll have at least partial disclosure. Now, the public would say there should be full disclosure because the underlying subject matter is government surveillance at the federal level, at the state level, at the local level, and that's a matter that's very controversial these days. And the public wants to know as much about that as possible, which is very understandable. So that is a big factor there. But on the other hand, and I say this based upon experience with sensitive federal records, sometimes in this sort of situation, there is some information that can be legitimately withheld under federal standards, such as, just to pick an example or an instance, the federal FOIA exemption for law enforcement techniques. And I would dare say that some but not all of the information at issue in the Tucson case, and perhaps also in the Florida case, also mentioned in the AP report, does fall within that federal standard, Exemption 7E. But that's not to say that all of it does.
It's probably fair to say that there will be more of these cases as local officials acquire the types of surveillance technologies that until now have been mainly federal, especially, for example, of checking in on cell phone communications.
Yes, as a matter of fact, when you say it would be fair to say, Tom, you might even be understating the case a little bit, because just taking a step back from the weeds that we've been in, I mean, I've been talking legalities very heavily, so, but taking a step back, looking at the underlying subject matter, government surveillance, warrantless wiretapping, access to information that is about individuals regarding their communications-related activities, there's mounting public interest in learning about that, and there is indeed a great potential wherever the federal government has participated, cooperated with a local government, state or city or county. Wherever there's been activity, there are records pertaining to that activity. And whatever there are records, there are people at the state level who can use the state FOIA to try to put that on the hook. So you could have the federal government running all around the country participating in these state FOIA lawsuits that are understandably filed as a matter of the public curiosity. And they all should be, as a legal matter, removed to federal court. You could wind up with dozens of such cases all around the country.
And Dan, just briefly, much has been made or questioned, I guess, about whether the Supreme Court justices have enough technology, familiarity with technology to weigh cases involving electronic surveillance and changing technology. Do you think courts overall are equipped to decide these sorts of things when it comes to emerging technology?
Okay, let me say first that I think Exhibit A for what you said, Emily, is that there was rather famously a Supreme Court argument not that long ago on a very technical telecommunications matter, and the public perception and perhaps reality was of the nine justices, eight of them didn't have a clue. And I'm exaggerating, obviously, when I say that, as to what the substance was, and only Justice Kagan, the youngest and hippest, perhaps, of all the justices, did understand that. That was something that was reported widely in the press. So I think you're right that there is some concern about that. However, in this particular type of case, it's not so technical as to make it difficult for a judge to determine the sensitivity of the information. Imagine, Emily, you're a federal judge in the District of Arizona, and you just have received a case that came from the state court, such as this Tucson case is. It's been removed from state court, and here's the local U.S. attorney or assistant United States attorney before you saying, Your Honor, we had to bring this case to you because we had to apply the federal standards. We can't have this case decided according to state law because that may not be as protective as the federal law is. And here's why this information that came from our participation or cooperation between federal and state at the local level, here's why it's exempt from disclosure under the federal standard exemption 7E. There's a lot of case law on that, and that's not that difficult to apply. The basic sensitivity is well established as a matter of law under the statute and under case law interpreting the statute. So that's not that difficult. If you had a dozen of these cases popping up and the local U.S. attorneys removing them to federal court and coming in and say, Your Honor, half of it falls within exemption 7E, and let me explain why, those judges would be able to adjudicate those cases.
Yeah.
That's not that unusual.
Dan Metcalf is an American University law professor. He's executive director of the Collaboration on Government Secrecy. Dan, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Glad to be with you.